You're just in time for the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Here, you'll find answers to your questions about the Christian faith, the Bible, and trends in the church today, because truth matters. How can we know for sure whether or not we're alone in the universe? Are there clues in the cosmos that prove that our existence here is an act of creation and not chance? We'll be answering those questions and many more on today's program as Hank welcomes Jay Richards to the Bible Answer Man. Jay is Research Fellow and Director of Institutional Relations for the Acton Institute. If you'd like to contact us here at CRI, please call our resource line at 888-7000-CRI. For faster service, visit our website at www.equip.org. Today's broadcast is an encore presentation. Now, here's your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
And before we get started with my guest, Jay Richards, let me just make a plug for The Privileged Planet as a DVD. It is absolutely compelling, breathtaking, and let me underscore this. Not a single Christian ought to be without this DVD. It's something you have to watch again, watch with your children, watch with your friends. It is an incredible, breathtaking, stunning tool. I have personally watched this 4 times now, and each time I have gained by watching it. Let me read something on the back cover of the Privileged Planet DVD, subtitled, by the way, The Search for Purpose in the Universe. Many scientists and philosophers have claimed that Earth is an ordinary speck of dust adrift without purpose or significance in a vast cosmic sea. Yet, current astronomical evidence seems to suggest exactly the opposite. We now know that a rare and finely tuned array of factors makes Earth suitable for complex life. We depend on our planet's oxygen-rich atmosphere, large moon, planetary neighbors, and its precise location within the solar system and Milky Way galaxy. But there's more. The same factors that make a planet like Earth hospitable to life also provide the best conditions for scientific discovery. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. Through stunning computer animation, interviews with leading scientists, and spectacular images of Earth and the cosmos, The Privileged Planet explores a startling connection between our capacity to survive and our ability to observe and understand the universe. Is this correlation merely a coincidence, or does it point to a deeper truth about purpose and intelligent design within the cosmos? Again, The Privileged Planet, it's a DVD. You must watch this with your children. It will be one of the most enriching experiences you could possibly have. The first time I watched this, and of course I have 9 children, but I watched this with my 10-year-old, Paul Stephen, and he was riveted to the DVD, and it took about 2 hours to get through the DVD because he kept interrupting me with questions. Again, get this resource. It is a must. It's available when you give us a call and talk to our resource consultants at 888-7000-CRI or when you log into the World Wide Web at equip.org. With that introduction, I want to welcome Jay Richards. He is one of the co-authors of The Privileged Planet to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Hi, Jay.
Hi.
Incredible piece of work.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate your kind comments.
I want to start with the very question that is posed on the back of the DVD, the correlation that we're talking about. Is this merely a coincidence, or does it point to a deeper truth about purpose and intelligent design within the cosmos?
Well, that was the question that we started with. My co-author Guillermo Gonzalez and I started working on this book, The Privileged Planet, in about 1999. And we were struck by the fact that there seemed to be solid evidence for design in the origin of the universe, the origin of life, the origin of these little molecular machines, sort of different places in the physical universe that looked like strong evidence for design. But it was hard to see a good solid evidence for design in what in the field of what's often called astrobiology, that is the sort of production of planets. And here's the basic problem. The universe is a really big place. There are about 10 to the 22 stars just in the observable universe, so that's a 1 with 22 zeros after it. And so you could sort of imagine the universe's big cosmic lottery, just sort of churning out possibilities. And so who's to say that, look, maybe it takes a lot of things to get a planet where life can happen, but the universe is really big. Maybe this is just, the result of some sort of chance process. And frankly, when we started the book, we thought, well, that's a legitimate objection. We don't know what the probabilities are that you could get an Earth-like planet. And we just have some kind of rough estimates. And so we found that sort of interesting because many people have used the rarity of Earth-like planets as an argument for design. But we thought more needed to be done, really, because, frankly, it was open to this objection that, well, improbable things happen all the time if given enough chances. And it was actually my co-author that first thought of this idea of a correlation between life and discovery, that is, a connection between the things life needs and the things that are needed for scientific discovery in the universe. It was really in the mid-1990s, and the story is told in the documentary, when he went to observe a perfect solar eclipse in India. And an eclipse is when, of course, the moon passes in front of the sun, and because of just the right set of coincidences, you get a lineup of the sun and the moon and the earth, and when they're in the right lineup, you get a perfect match in the sky between the sun and the moon. Now, this is an interesting thing. People think, well, this is an amazing coincidence that they would just be the same size in the sky. I mean, the moon is 400 times closer than the sun, but it's 400 times smaller, and so you get this strange match. But Guillermo is an astronomer, and he knew that the two things that were required for perfect solar eclipses were also very important for life on our planet. The first one is that if you want to have life on a planet, you need a lot of liquid water for a number of reasons we could talk about. But to get liquid water, you need your planet to be just the right distance from its sun, not too close, not too far, in what's called the Goldilocks zone. Well, so when you get your planet in the right distance from its star, that's going to fix the size of your star in the sky. So that's one condition. The other condition for producing this perfect solar eclipse is that you need a moon like we have. Well, we now know, and we've only known for about 10 years, that the moon is very important for life on the planet. If we didn't have the moon, if it disappeared fairly quickly, the Earth would start wobbling on its axis. It would end up with catastrophic climate patterns, and most of the complex life, at least, would cease to exist. And so what Guillermo was looking at, he was looking at these two things that are essential for life on this planet, our distance from our host star, the sun, and our distance from this large satellite, the moon. And when you get those two things that we need for our existence, you get perfect solar eclipses where these bodies match in the sky. Well, that's important because all astronomers know that perfect solar eclipses have been very important in the history of scientific discovery. And in fact, if we hadn't had perfect solar eclipses, we'd have had a very hard time figuring out what stars were like, what they're made of. But because we were able to use perfect solar eclipses in these certain experiments with the sun, it essentially opened up astrophysics so that astronomers could study the universe at large. And that was the first kind of instance that he had that, hey, what if those things life needs are tied up with those things that are needed for discovery? So in other words, those places in the universe where observers could exist would also be set up in the best places for observing. And that was kind of the beginning of our project.
Okay, I want you to summarize that one more time. In other words, the same narrow circumstances that allow us to exist also provide the best setting for making scientific discoveries. I want people to understand that point because that's your contribution.
It is, and it's a unique contribution. We found, Kepler and a few people had talked about this idea before, but nobody had ever actually made this argument for what we call a correlation between habitability and measurability, which is, that was actually the original title of the book, but fortunately we thought of another argument. But it's just the argument that life, or the conditions for life and the conditions for scientific discovery are found together in the universe. So you'll find observers in the best places for observing, and that to us looks like a conspiracy rather than a mere coincidence, like a setup. That's what you would expect. In other words, if the universe were designed for discovery, but it's not what you would expect if the universe is the result of chance or just some purely impersonal process. And so we're extending the argument for design from life to scientific discovery itself, so that literally the universe is intended to be discovered. It's intended to be read and considered and understood.
Well, maybe I can put it this way. We're in the Milky Way galaxy, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if we were in a different posture or position in the Milky Way galaxy, it would be as though there's a cloud cover and we couldn't see through that cloud cover and discover the incredible intelligent design in the universe.
That's exactly right. I mean, just take that one example. There's a place in the galaxy called the Galactic Habitable Zone that's sort of the friendly neighborhood. It's where you want to be. And it's, you know, we're in this Milky Way galaxy. It's this flat spiral galaxy, and we're about midway out from the center to the edge, and we're between spiral arms. Well, that's the friendly place for life. But if you could then say, okay, where would you want to pick if you could be only one place in the galaxy for scientific discovery? That is, so that you could see nearby stars, so you could figure out the structure of the galaxy, so you could see distant galaxies. Where would you want to be? Well, it turns out where you'd want to be is right there in the Galactic Habitable Zone. So the place that life needs to be in the galaxy is also, as it turns out, the place that you'd want to be for doing cosmology and astrophysics. And it's because we can do that that we can discover things. We can discover the size of the universe. We can discover that it has an age, that it came into existence in the finite past. All these things that would really have been impossible, or at least very difficult, say, if we're in the center of the galaxy, aside from being dead because of all the X-ray and gamma radiation that exists in the center of the galaxy, as you described, it would be basically a haze. It'd just be a bright light because you'd have way too many stars nearby to your stars. You'd have a lot of gas and dust that were illuminated by the stars, and so you couldn't even see out of your nearby neighborhood. In fact, it would be difficult even to see the other planets in our solar system.
Yeah, the reason I'm pressing this point is because it's a stunning point when you think about it. Not only are the conditions of this universe such that we can have life as we know it today, but we couldn't even discover the complexity of that life if we were not where we are.
That's right. I mean, it's so many things that scientists often just take this for granted. I mean, there's something that, we've discovered it because we've spent a bunch of time looking for it. But as difficult as the history of scientific discovery is, there'd be many circumstances in which it would have been a whole lot harder, if not completely impossible. I mean, we take for granted, for instance, that we're able to see stars, or we're able to see the other planets in the solar system. But, you know, if we didn't have a night sky and a clear atmosphere, or even if we had too many moons that created light pollution, we wouldn't be able to see those things. And so we wouldn't have been able to discover all the things about the universe that we've been able to discover. And so what we've tried to do in the book, The Privileged Planet, and then the documentary, is sort of focus people's attention on this thing that we've been taking for granted, namely the conditions for being able to discover the things that we have been able to discover.
Well, Jay, you know, that's all really great, but didn't the Copernican Revolution actually demote Earth from the status of a privileged planet? And hasn't the Hubble telescope further demonstrated that we're not all that special in the grand scheme of things?
Well, and that's certainly the sort of stereotype that you would get. If you pick up almost any astronomy textbook, for instance, or even a physics textbook, and see what they say about the Copernican Revolution. Copernicus, of course, was the guy that suggested in 1543 that the Earth is a planet that goes around the Sun like the other planets, as opposed to the planets and everything else revolving around the Earth. Well, what happened in the early 20th century is that a man named Harlow Shapley took Copernicus's insight that it was since confirmed, and he turned it into kind of this metaphysical principle. So Shapley basically said, well, not only are we merely a planet, you know, but our planet orbits around a completely insignificant little star in a just run-of-the-mill galaxy, and in fact a weird part of the galaxy, not even in the center of the galaxy, in a kind of obscure neighborhood. And in fact, the universe is huge. It's got billions of galaxies in it. And so if you really consider us and consider ourselves in the vastness of the universe, we're utterly insignificant. And this is this idea called the Copernican principle. But what's interesting is that almost everything we've learned, certainly everything we've learned in the 20th century, contradicts it. If the Copernican principle were true, then you'd assume that whatever happened here must happen countless times elsewhere. And this is exactly what people thought. Even in the 1950s, many well-educated people thought that there was intelligent life on Mars, for instance, since it was so much like the Earth. It's only since we've sent probes to Mars that this enthusiasm is actually dampened, so that now we're just looking for evidence of past liquid water on Mars. The trend is very much in the opposite direction from this idea that Earth is just insignificant and a run-of-the-mill place. almost everything we learn in the field of astrobiology suggests that there are a lot of things that have to go just right in order to get life on a planet. Our prediction is that the more we learn in the next 15 or 20 years, the more conditions are going to be piled on.
We have the incredible privilege of having Jay Richards with us, and do not hesitate. Get this DVD. It'll be one of the most important resources you have ever received from the Christian Research Institute. We're going to be talking about that and much, much more on the other side of the break, so please don't touch that dial.
When looking at the night sky, our guest, Dr. Jay Richards, argues the cosmos presents irrefutable evidence of God's design, genius, and majesty. You'll find this evidence examined in the documentary film, The Privileged Planet, The Search for Purpose in the Universe. Receive The Privileged Planet on DVD for your gift today to the Christian Research Institute. Simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. From the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Hank Unplugged podcast to the Christian Research Journal and CRI's vast free website resources accessed by more than 200,000 users each month, it's no exaggeration to say that these would all quickly disappear without friends like you. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the key month of June to ensure that we end the financial year in a position of strength. To make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org. We'll be right back with more of this special edition of The Bible Answer Man. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, Revised and Updated, is a comprehensive collection of the most often asked as well as most difficult questions Hank Hanegraaff has received in nearly three decades of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. This expanded edition contains new entries, leading readers to a better understanding of God and our relationship to Him in Jesus Christ. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, Revised and Updated, is a comprehensive, handy, and attractive volume that you will return to again and again. Take your exploration of God's Word to new heights and receive the Revised and Updated Complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.
Does every day feel like a political battle? Do you feel like traditional values keep losing ground? Every day we wake up in a world that is increasingly hostile to Christianity. Like many believers, you may be wondering what the future holds for Christians in America. The great need of the day is a sweeping revolution of courage in our lives, families, and churches. The war is not yet lost. A Call for Courage by Michael Anthony will spark that revolution in you, offering believers a playbook with specific steps to equip Christians for the battle ahead, helping you to live with power, truth, and love in an age of intolerance and fear. To receive your copy of A Call for Courage, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.
Endless predictions about end-time events and published timetables counting down the end have proven to be wrong 100% of the time. When doomsday predictions fail, there is double-duty damage. Many theologically juvenile and scripturally superficial Christians abandon the faith as a result of these failed predictions, and the public image of Christianity is damaged, making Christians appear to be hopelessly naive and easily duped biblical bumpkins. Hank Hanegraaff's book, Prophetic Stars in the Constellation of Biblical Prophecy, will equip you not only to interpret biblical prophecy correctly, but to remember it as well. To receive your copy of Prophetic Stars as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. Many scientists and philosophers claim that Earth is an ordinary speck of dust adrift without purpose or significance in a vast cosmic sea. Yet current astronomical evidence seems to suggest just the opposite. You'll find this evidence examined in The Privileged Planet, The Search for Purpose in the Universe. In The Privileged Planet, you'll discover why the best scientific evidence refutes the misnamed Copernican principle, the widely held idea that there is nothing special about Earth or its place in the universe. But instead, Earth is precisely positioned within the galaxy, not only as needed to support life, but also to allow us to find answers to the greatest mysteries of the universe. For your gift to the Christian Research Institute today, we'd like to send you The Privileged Planet on DVD. Simply call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Once again, here's Bible Answer Man host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Then again, The Privileged Planet, The Search for Purpose in the Universe is both a DVD and a book, and we're making both of them available. Give us a call right now at 888-7000-CRI or log into the World Wide Web at equip.org. You can also order by sending us a letter and a check to Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Jay Richards is the co-author with Guillermo Gonzalez of The Privileged Planet. Let me read you something that was said with regards to this book. This is by Joshua Gilder, former White House speechwriter, who says, "The Privileged Planet is simply a beautifully written piece of work, so lucid and compelling in its presentation that even the most lay of laypersons will fly through its pages, barely able to put the book down." This book and the DVD is great for small groups, for Sunday school classes, for students of all sorts. You want to get this resource. I can't stress enough the absolute incredible tool that this Privileged Planet will be to you. Get the DVD. It has all kinds of features. In fact, Jay, before we go to some other questions,
sure,
tell us about the features on this, because there's some great, once the presentation is over, that's not the end of it.
Yeah, and the documentary, I mean, the producers of Lustra Media, who are our production partners with Discovery Institute, and they interviewed a lot of folks for the documentary, and so you end up with a lot of stuff that doesn't get used. And so they ended up with this big series of questions and answers from people, experts in physics or cosmology or the history of science, and then some really great space footage. I mean, you know, besides all the digital animation that was created specifically for the documentary, they had access to a lot of the NASA footage, because the great thing is that NASA costs us a lot of money as taxpayers, but a lot of that stuff is public domain, so they were able to use a whole lot of the resources that NASA has made available, and they worked with the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Southern California and were able to access some of their animations and stuff. So Guillermo and I could not have been more pleased with how the documentary came out.
It's just a stunning, stunning project, and I'm so glad that you did it, and so privileged to be able to offer it to our constituency. Carl Sagan, before he died, Jay, said that our posturing, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe are all challenged by the fact that we are but a point of pale blue light, a lonely speck in the great enveloping dark. In other words, we're not really a privileged planet at all.
Well, this is, you know, I always, you read that from Carl Sagan, and you wonder how much fun he was at cocktail parties with stuff like this. But the reality is that Sagan was basically expressing this conviction of the Copernican principle. That is, the Copernican principle basically says that science has discovered that there's no purpose to the universe, as Steven Weinberg said, you know, that the more the universe seems comprehensible, the more it also seems pointless. And so this idea, it's claimed to be based on the scientific evidence. That is, it's claimed to be a discovery, you know, something we found out in the 19th or 20th century. But many of us think actually what Sagan was doing is essentially expressing his worldview, and his worldview is scientific materialism. And that's basically matter in motion over time gives rise to some complex creatures such as ourselves, and those creatures, you know, concoct this idea of God. Well, that's materialism, and there's just two questions. Look, is materialism true, and does the evidence of science actually confirm it or contradict it? Well, many of us think, in fact, it contradicts it. If you look at the evidence of the natural world openly, so you don't use materialistic blinders, but you say, could there be evidence for design, or could there be evidence for purpose? If so, what would it look like? And you dispose yourself to the world in such a way that you're going to be open to that evidence. We think the evidence is abundant, and it flatly contradicts the materialistic worldview that Carl Sagan expressed.
Okay, I want to quote somebody else, and this is a quote from Harvard psychologist Steven Pinker. You might have seen it in Time magazine.
Yeah.
But he says, essentially, that no competent engineer would have designed the universe in such a bungled fashion. And if an intelligent designer actually lived on Earth, we'd throw rocks at his windows. So that, from his perspective, the Earth is not optimized for scientific discovery. In fact, the Earth isn't optimized at all.
Right. I mean, this is a common, the materialists often say this, and he's focusing on the universe and the Earth. Others, like Richard Dawkins, focus on human beings or on biology. You know, Richard Dawkins said, well, the mammalian eye. I mean, a good engineer would have done a much better job. And when people say this, I always want to say, well, you know, go ahead, give it a try. You know, let's see how you do. But the reality is that engineers rarely say this sort of thing. Science popularizers say it. But engineers understand that when you design a complex system, you have multiple competing goals that you have to meet. And so these competing goals, you have to find a compromise for them. So, for instance, if you want to make the best laptop, you don't just say, well, I want to make the fastest laptop possible, and that's my only goal. Well, you could do that, but it'd cost you millions of dollars. It would weigh a lot. It would be very delicate. It wouldn't be anything anybody would want to buy. What you are trying to do to make the best computer laptop is one that optimizes for price and size and durability and speed and ease of use and all those things. And so, in other words, you're looking for philosophers in engineering call constrained optimization. That is, the optimal compromise of these competing objectives. Well, that's what you're going to have to do if you're going to create a world, a universe in this, or a place in this universe where life can exist. You have multiple competing goods that you have to find the compromise for. So you need a planet that can get energy, for instance. Energy from fusion reactions is a really efficient source. And so stars are an efficient source of energy. But on the other hand, that energy can be deadly unless you're the right distance from it. Or if you're too far away, you don't get enough energy. Well, that's just one example of a single parameter, to call it by the technical term, that has to be set just so. So when people like Steven Pinker make these claims that, well, the universe is bungled, they're almost always focusing on one variable and saying, well, I could have done this much better. But if you think of all the other factors that were involved in creating that thing, you discover what a remarkable universe it is. And that's setting aside, for the sake of argument, questions about the fall, for instance. Of course, Christians don't think that the universe as we have it here is necessarily exactly how it has been from its origin. But, of course, there are questions about what the effects of the fall are. Nevertheless, even looking at the universe as it is, it's remarkable how exquisite it is. And frankly, most scientists in the history of science have been much more taken by the exquisite beauty of the created universe. It's really only in the last 150 years that some scientists and popularizers have claimed that it's more or less bungled, as Steven Pinker said.
Jay, just from a very simplistic perspective, you recognize that you have 100 billion stars in our galaxy,
right?
And then you have 100 billion galaxies, so I don't know what that makes, 10,000 billion stars in the observable universe, and that is a breakthrough made possible by the Hubble telescope. You got the Milky Way galaxy with 100,000 light years in diameter from
right.
a perspective of size. Just from a simplistic standpoint, you look at that, or you consider that for just a moment,
mm-hmm.
and it seems to press on your consciousness that there has to be a God.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly does that for me and many people. I mean, and this is, you know, David in the Psalms. You know, on the one hand, what is man that you're mindful of him? You know, when I look at the heavens, there's sort of your intuitions go in two directions. On the one hand, we seem small and insignificant relative to the vastness of the universe. But on the other hand, the vastness of the universe can point beyond itself to something much more powerful and much more vast. And that's what it does for most people. But unfortunately, if you have materialistic blinders on, then all there is this material cosmos. It's Carl Sagan said in his famous series, Cosmos. He said, the cosmos is all that is or ever was or ever will be. And so in that framework, it can seem like a sort of vast, lonely place. We're just the only sort of meaningful, intelligent beings in all of reality are here on this one little planet. And so it's funny how the same evidence gets reinterpreted depending on a theistic framework or a materialistic framework.
Yeah, that's the other side of the coin. If there wasn't intelligent life elsewhere, it'd be an incredible waste of space. And you have to ask yourself, what kind of designer would create a universe with that much wasted space? And that leads to the issue, of course, that you deal with in The Privileged Planet, and that is that maybe there are many other intelligent civilizations, maybe thousands and thousands of other intelligent civilizations, which, once again, does not make us particularly privileged. I want to play a clip here by Dr. Seth Sostak and have you comment on that. He's a senior astronomer at the SETI Institute, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Right.
He's a Princeton Caltech guy. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to what he has to say and get your comments.
Sure.
Carl Sagan thought there might be millions of civilizations that are kind of contemporaries of ours. I can imagine that within the Milky Way galaxy, the number of contemporary intelligent civilizations, I think, is probably in the thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands. But the bottom line, actually, when people ask, well, why do you think that they're out there, is that the universe is extraordinarily rich, extraordinarily vast. The number of stars that we can see, it's on the order of 10,000 billion star systems. So unless there's something very, very special, miraculous, if you will, about our solar system, about our planet Earth, unless there's something extraordinarily unusual about it, then what happened here must have happened many times in the history of the universe.
So we are duplicated all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, Sostak, that's a really nice quote from him because it basically expresses the conviction of the Copernican principle. If something happened here, life happened here, look, I mean, we're here, obviously, and so if there's nothing special as we know about Earth, so if it happened here, life must have happened countless times elsewhere. And so it's basically a deduction from this idea of the Copernican principle. Now, I feel like as a Christian, I'd say, well, look, God could have created a universe in which, the universe is filled with life, or he could make a universe in which life is rare. So in theological terms, I feel like, well, I guess it's an open question. But what's funny is that the Copernican principle is usually used as kind of a hatchet against theism, so that, basically it's a deduction that says, well, life must be easy because it's here, and so any planet that's more or less like this is almost certainly going to have life on it. But it's funny because Sostak said, unless there's something very unusual, miraculous, if you will, about our planet, then whatever happened here must have happened countless times elsewhere. He's using the word must. That's it's like there's some kind of inner necessity so that, the universe, just these kinds of things are just going to naturally happen. But the reality is at the moment we're developing telescopes that are going to be able to view Earth-like planets, if there are any, at least in the nearby galaxy, and we're going to actually be able to get some empirical answers to these questions. Our bet, at least, is that the habitable planets are going to be quite rare, and if there are any others like it, they're going to be almost exactly like the Earth. We're not going to be finding any planets around different kinds of stars that are going to have any kind of complex life in them.
I'm going to ask Jay on the other side of the break, from a scientific perspective, what the probabilities are, or the possibilities even, and the problems with the hypothesis of multi-universes. We're going to deal with that on the other side of the break, and then we're going to go right to your questions right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. And do remember the Privileged Planet DVD, available through the Christian Research Institute. Call right now, 888-7000-CRI, or log into the World Wide Web at equip.org. But don't delay. This is a must for every single person listening to my voice right now. We'll be right back with your questions for Jay Richards. Don't touch that dial.
When looking at the night sky, our guest Jay Richards argues the cosmos presents irrefutable evidence of God's design, genius, and majesty. You'll find this evidence in The Privileged Planet. It discusses the harmony of Earth and the Moon, that they work together to sustain earthly life as one intricate system, how Earth's atmosphere helps protect us from harmful radiation, yet allows just enough radiation, which is crucial for life, and much more. Simply call 888-7000-CRI to order. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or find it on our website at equip.org. Now don't go away, the conversation's just heating up. The Bible Answer Man will continue right after this.
With the new atheists increasing their mockery of Christianity and militant secularism ridiculing religious convictions of all stripes, we clearly don't need zealous but misguided Christians inviting further abuse by misreading and misrepresenting biblical prophecies. Hank Hanegraaff's book, Prophetic Stars in the Constellation of Biblical Prophecy, will enable you to understand, remember, and communicate biblical prophecy. Moreover, your investment in Prophetic Stars through the Christian Research Institute will equip and encourage eager Christian brothers and sisters who genuinely yearn for truth and reliable tools to apprehend and defend their faith. To receive your copy of Prophetic Stars as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org.
Why do we exist? Why does anything at all exist? The question of cosmic origins and our place in the grand scheme of things has been debated for millennia. Today's popular narrative is that it all happened by purposeless, unguided natural processes. In her book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, Melissa Kane Travis offers powerful evidence that just the opposite is true, that cosmology, astronomy, biochemistry, and other disciplines strongly support what she calls the Maker Thesis, which explains the origin, rationality, and intricacy of nature and the human mind's capacity to comprehend it. Find out what the conversation between Christian faith and science reveals about our Maker. To receive Science and the Mind of the Maker, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.
With over 500,000 copies in print, Hank Hanegraaff's Bible Answer books were born out of his many years of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. He's taken his on-air answers to questions and chiseled them until only the gems emerge. Questions involving biblical interpretation, cults, science, ethics, apparent contradictions, and much more. This remarkable collection of concise answers is now even better. My goal, says Hank, is to take the complex and make it simple and memorable. Receive your copy of the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated, as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. The role that listeners like you have played in CRI's ministry has always been vital. Now it could be more critical than ever. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the financially critical month of June. To make a gift to support CRI's many mind-changing outreaches, simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us online at equip.org. And now we return to the Bible Answer Man. Here's Hank.
One of the naturalistic explanations for the fine-tuning of the universe is that there's an infinite ensemble of universes out there. And Jay, before the break, I was going to pose the question to you from a scientific perspective. What is the problem with the hypothesis of having multiple universes?
Well, there's lots of problems. The first, of course, is that by definition, you can't have any direct evidence of such universes because there are other universes. And so in the so-called kind of multiverse theories, you have these other universes that are causally disconnected from our universe. And really, the only reason they're invoked is, as you said, to try to explain away the fine-tuning of our universe. So the idea is basically that, well, yeah, it looks very unusual that the laws of physics and the physics of constants of physics should be very carefully fine-tuned and rest on a razor's edge in our universe. But of course, if they weren't like that, we wouldn't be here to observe them. And so maybe there's just lots of universes, an infinite ensemble, and most of those universes will be uninhabitable, but every so often you'll get one that's inhabitable, and life in those universes will look around and say, gee, isn't our universe sort of well-fit for our existence? The problem, of course, is that the only reason they're being invoked is to explain away what otherwise looks like really strong evidence for design. And if we allowed that kind of reasoning in everyday existence, we could never infer design. So the example that we use in the book is the story of the firing squad. And imagine you have a man who's sentenced to death by a firing squad. He's pushed up against a wall, and 50 sharpshooters line up 5 feet away to shoot him. And they all fire at the same time, and he finds himself still alive. He pulls the blindfold off, and he notices that they have made a perfect outline around his body with the bullets. Now, he could say, well, you know, I should be surprised to find myself alive, but perhaps there are, you know, billions of other firing squads going on all around the solar system or the universe, and every so often you're going to get a firing squad that's going to miss, and so I'm just the lucky one. So I really shouldn't be surprised to find myself here. Well, the reasoning is exactly the same as it is in the case of the mini-universe theory. You have something that needs to be explained. On the face of it, it looks like clear evidence of purpose or design. But you don't want to go that way, so what you do is you inflate the resources the chance has available. What philosophers call this inflating the probabilistic resources. So that, you know, well, you know, it seems unlikely if this only happened once, but if it happened billions of times, then it would surely have happened at least once. And the problem is, unless you have independent evidence of all those other things happening, it's not relevant to the probability. And so to me, and to many others, it looks really like just bad faith reasoning, so much so that even Martin Gardner, who is a well-known sort of skeptic on the other side on these issues, has said that a creation by a single intelligent being is vastly to be preferred as a hypothesis to this idea of just, you know, multiplying infinite universes.
Let me throw you a little curve before we go to our callers. Jay, you and Guillermo Gonzalez have no right whatsoever to speak on this subject because you're part of the intelligent design movement.
Yeah, that's the claim. Yeah, it's sort of a secret conspiracy, a theocratic conspiracy. Well, of course, I mean, Guillermo and I are both publicly known as Christians. We've been seen going to church. We have articles on our theological views on the Internet, and so that's certainly true. But we think, regardless of a person's perspective, regardless of their supposed motivations, good design arguments are based on public evidence. So it's evidence that anybody can look at, and it's not like, you know, these are not based on some kind of private mystical experience we had. The argument in the book, The Privileged Planet, the documentary, is evidence from the scientific literature. Anyone can go evaluate it. They can look at our reasoning. And those kind of things, frankly, those should stand on their own, regardless of a person's background or their supposed religious motivations or what have you. I certainly wouldn't criticize Richard Dawkins' argument for Darwinism because he's an atheist. I would argue against his position on the merits of the arguments and the evidence.
Right to the phone calls. Chris in Illinois, you're on with Jay Richards. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. Thanks, Hank, for taking my call. I appreciate your ministry.
Thank you.
I got stumped by a question by somebody that I've never seen the answer in any Christian apologetic book before ever, dealing with design. Someone asked me, in the case of design as far as wisdom teeth, canine teeth, the appendix, and different things that we do need, we do use now that we originally wouldn't have used during creation, or organs that we have now that we don't use. And the main question they actually asked me, because it was a person that was a skeptic, was the fact that if a creator, designer, made these things, and this Jesus Christ, who is our Savior, but that he came down from earth in a human body, had the same organs as we do, the appendix and so on, and colon and everything like that, that if he was resurrected physically, why would or would he retain all of his organs in his body if God designed, if he designed it that way? Because apparently our design...
So in other words, the bottom line is why would we have organs without purpose, and Jesus Christ is going to have those in his glorified body? That doesn't make any sense. How do you respond, Jay?
Well, I mean, this is an interesting question. I mean, Jesus, is in the book of John, he prepares fish on the beach after the resurrection. So the implication is that, you know, perhaps he eats fish. The problem is that the question, I mean, there's a deep mystery about what exactly our resurrection bodies are like. If we, the only evidence we have is basically the resurrection appearances of Jesus. And he was sometimes able to hide himself, as on the road to Emmaus. Other times he was clearly recognizable. He was able to eat, but he's also able to sort of appear and disappear. He seemed to be able to pass through walls. The reality is that what our resurrection body is going to be like is something of a mystery. What I think that the sort of crucial points is that there's some kind of continuity between our present body, our present form of existence, and our resurrection body. We're not just going to be these ghostly, ethereal beings, but yet we will be resurrected. But a lot of these questions, I thought you were going to actually ask the question about the supposed vestigial organs.
Is the question. I mean, yeah. Why would God create us with organs that supposedly have no purpose at all?
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't probably create us with organs that have no purpose. But with the vestigial organs, the vestigial organ controversy has a very bad pedigree historically. About 100 years ago, there was a book written on this, and it was basically a textbook that listed vestigial organs from tonsils and adenoids and various of our glands to the appendix. But what's happened in the intervening 100 years is that we've discovered the function for all these things. And many of the things that were claimed to be vestigial organs, all they were is things we didn't know what they did. And in a Darwinian framework, you're going to think, well, there's probably a lot of leftover from our evolutionary past. But, you know, if you're not in a Darwinian framework, you might just say, well, let's try to find out what this thing does. And in virtually every case where we've talked about the function and we've learned more, we've discovered that these things that were called vestigial organs, that is sort of leftover organs, actually have a function. And so don't always believe it when someone says that an organ is vestigial. On the other hand, it could be the case that we have are adapted for some environments that aren't useful in other environments. If you have, you know, very dark skin, you're adapted for a place that's very sunny, and you might end up in Michigan or something where it's not all that sunny. But that just means that, you know, our design plan are adapted for lots of different environments, and they might sometimes not get used.
Kind of interesting, Jay, the appendix. We used to jump the gun. Have the appendix out, and we thought, well, it has no purpose whatsoever, no big problem.
Right.
Now we find out does have a direct correlation to our immune system.
Yeah, it's the same thing with tonsils. I mean, when I was a kid, I had mine ripped out when I was 4, and now we've discovered that there's a correlation between people that have their tonsils and adenoids removed and people that have sinus trouble. And I've had sinus trouble my whole life. I don't know for sure, but the reality is I think that the backdrop of that sort of thinking, this kind of Darwinian thinking that this stuff is all vestigial, has frankly had some really bad medical consequences that we fully haven't really worked out. Now, certainly there are hard questions to be asked about, you know, the function of organs and all those sorts of things. And so they have to be taken on a case-by-case basis. But just in a general sense, I think that folks should be initially skeptical of claims that an organ is vestigial, and they ought to look into it themselves before they feel stumped.
Back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Barbara in Boston, Massachusetts. You're on with Jay Richards.
Hi, Hank. Thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate your ministry, too.
Thank you.
And I'm an astronomy teacher at a high school.
Great.
And I love your DVD. I played it last year to all my classes.
Wonderful.
It actually elicited a lot of good discussions within the classroom because, of course, the textbooks are very much quoting Carl Sagan and all these others that you've mentioned as well. I also loaned it to the other two astronomy teachers, one of whom by the way, I never took an astronomy course. I just kind of got thrown into teaching this.
That's a lot of the stories I hear like that, actually.
Yeah, my major was chemistry, physics.
Okay.
But at any rate, the astronomer who has been teaching astronomy for almost 40 years, he went to play it for his classroom as well, and he said he loved the first half, and he said the last portion of it got into religion, and he turned it right off.
What about that, Jay?
No more science.
Yeah.
What about that claim?
Well, I mean, this is what some people might have heard, Hank. The film was premiered at the Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C., at the Smithsonian, and this was a straightforward event the Discovery Institute did with the Museum of Natural History. We had it officially approved. The documentary was vetted by a science committee and said, yeah, it's great. And then when it was announced publicly, there's going to be this premiere, I mean, it was just absolute pandemonium, and the Smithsonian was flooded with emails. And so they had to review it again. And they said, well, it's fine on the science. And then they finally said, well, yeah, the science is all fine and solid, but it does take a kind of a religious turn at the end. Hank, I mean, you've seen the documentary. Basically, what we do is we argue for design in the documentary. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even explicitly argue for the existence of God. There is some discussion about the theological beliefs of the early scientists. But frankly, I mean, I think this is such a strange thing to say, because no one said that when Carl Sagan's Cosmos theory aired over and over and over on PBS. I mean, he started the series with a doctrinal claim. He said the cosmos is all that is or ever was or ever will be. He never even argued for it. He just asserted it. We, on the other hand, have a documentary and a book in which we try to marshal empirical evidence and then give what we think is a reasonable interpretation of that evidence, which points toward design. But just saying design to some people seems it's like we've committed some kind of intellectual sin. Committed religion or something like that. But the reality is that when you're talking about the origin of the universe, there are always going to be theological implications one way or the other. And so if people don't have a problem with Carl Sagan, I don't think they should have a problem with that.
Jay Richards has done just an incredible service along with his co-author Guillermo Gonzalez by producing The Privileged Planet. It is available when you give us a call at 888-7000-CRI or log into the World Wide Web at equip.org. He's going to be with us for an extra hour once we go off the air. Stay with us. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time with more.
Thanks for tuning in to this encore presentation of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. We'd like to thank Dr. Jay Richards for joining us today. Jay will be back tomorrow to talk more about how the heavens declare the glory of the Lord. We hope you'll join us for that. As part of the Christian Research Institute's ministry to edify and equip Christians to stand firmly and fruitfully for the faith, we screen quality Christian books and DVDs from a wide variety of sources. This screening and evaluation process is a value add for friends and supporters of the ministry, reducing their need to search for sound resources while ensuring that the resources offered are those worthy of CRI's stamp of approval. Hank is offering 4 hand-picked books during June to safeguard that Christians are never outgunned. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the financially crucial month of June. To make a gift to support CRI's mind-changing outreaches, simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271. Or simply visit online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter.
In the centuries since Jesus walked among our ancestors, people have sought to make sense of our Savior. The earliest Christian and secular sources show a complex, multi-layered figure who impacted lives and changed the trajectory of history. In his book, A Doubter's Guide to Jesus, John Dixon dives into the Bible and beyond to examine the earliest historical writings and to present 12 distinct portraits of Jesus, including portraits of Jesus as teacher, healer, Israel, Christ, temple, Savior, and much more. Whether you have known and loved the Lord Jesus for decades or are considering his relevance for the first time, you'll find this book an intriguing and quite likely belief-altering experience. To receive your copy of A Doubter's Guide to Jesus, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org.
Endless predictions about end-time events and published timetables counting down the end have proven to be wrong 100% of the time. When doomsday predictions fail, there is double duty damage. Many theologically juvenile and scripturally superficial Christians abandon the faith as a result of these failed predictions, and the public image of Christianity is damaged, making Christians appear to be hopelessly naive and easily duped biblical bumpkins.
Hank Hanegraaff's book, Prophetic Stars in the Constellation of Biblical Prophecy, will equip you not only to interpret biblical prophecy correctly, but to remember it as well. To receive your copy of Prophetic Stars as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org.